So we have a guest today. Matt, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about what you do and your interest in the auto industry.
Good morning. Glad to be here. My name is Matt Desmond. I am a subject matter specialist in manufacturing for automotive and heavy equipment at Capgemini. I am a consultant in the auto industry focusing on technology and business transformation. I've been in the industry for about 18 years, focusing on sales, marketing, after sales, and customer care, and I've been at Capgemini for about 9 years. So glad to be here.
Great. And your organization released a new, an annual survey of car buyers around the world recently. And one thing that struck me, and there's quite a bit in there, but the first thing that struck me was the brand loyalty, because you asked the question about Apple, Google, the tech companies essentially vis-a-vis the existing OEMs. So tell us about that.
Yes. So the Cars Online study is a study that Capgemini performs annually. We're in our 16th year. There's about 7,500 respondents around the world in the U.S., the U.K., France, Germany, Brazil, India, and China. If we focus on the questions about the new entrants to the marketplace, one of the areas of interest for dealers and for manufacturers is that overall 50% of consumers would be interested in purchasing an automobile or vehicle from Apple or Google. And when you go down to the younger demographic, that goes up to as high as 65%. The highest interest we've seen is in China and India, with 74% in China, 81% in India. And then if we just take a look at the U.S., it's 29%. So, you know, what does this really mean? We're looking at the entrance of Apple, you know, committing, I believe, a week ago to shipping a product in 2019 as a real tangible threat to the other players in the automotive industry. This is going to raise the bar significantly in terms of customer expectations for the entire sales and ownership process. What I would say as well is that, you know, as customers become quite accustomed expecting the types of integration and services that an Apple or a Google may provide, which are quite pervasive and quite digital and pretty seamless, we feel that the pressure is going to be even more on the traditional OEMs to provide a similar experience. You might know that many OEMs today have people in their stores that work kind of like an Apple Genius Bar, you know, focusing on technology and helping people understand things. We think it's going to get, the pressure is going to be raised, and it's going to be really a battle that'll be good for consumers to have the best experience. And Apple entering the marketplace, I know that Google has indicated that publicly they are not planning on manufacturing an automobile, but it's going to definitely have an impact.
Okay. Hi. Thanks. Thanks. This is fascinating. I wanted to dwell a little bit on this. Looking at the data you published, and first, this interesting difference between India, China, even Brazil, and the U.S. and the U.K. I would say Germany among them. So I'm looking at Germany, 32% interested or willing to switch to a technology brand. So it's ranging from 26 to 32 from UK, US, Germany, and ranging between 60 and 80%, let's say, between the emerging markets, Brazil, China, India. Now, there's a couple of questions I would have. Is firstly, why is this partly demographic? Because the age groups you're showing already, the 18 to 34 is much higher than the 50 plus. Is the U.S. simply more mature buyers that are being represented, or is it something truly across the board?
You know, when I look at the demographics of our survey respondents, they're pretty consistent in terms of spread. So I'm not interpreting this to be a reflection of, you know, perhaps speaking to more in a younger demographic in India or China than the USA. That being said, I think that there is a higher reception or a higher interest in a high-growth economy, which is digital first. You know, India and China, we know, our economic powerhouses. You know, despite maybe a blip on the radar here and there, these are, you know, emerging markets where technology is first and foremost, and customers have a very high expectation for a seamless integration with their digital life in their vehicle. Whereas if we look at, say, a more traditional market where you've been manufacturing and driving vehicles for, you know, over 100 years, that, you know, I would say only in the last 15 to 20 years have any technology, I'm interpreting that as just its expectations of the customer.
So it's non-consumption, basically, or low consumption in those markets sort of are more exciting as an entry because of, you know, an entrant could come in and say, we have nothing to overcome in terms of brand preference. So this is important to me because it suggests that there is a great opportunity for those who come with the technology portfolio to look at emerging markets more than in, you know, the entrenched incumbents, which are controlling the developed markets. And in particular, I mean, how does this reconcile with Tesla's approach of saying not only do we enter the U.S. first, but we enter the most demanding segment of the U.S. and in the most demanding geography of the U.S.?
Yeah, I think there's a few elements to consider and analyze when looking at these statistics. So, you know, when we ask our respondents in our survey about their willingness to switch brands, that is a real threat to the entrenched competition. And the consumer in, say, an emerging market like in India or China just has an expectation of a seamless digital experience that they're they're just expecting it to be in their vehicle. My interpretation of this would be that for a mature market like the U.S. or Germany or the U.K. or France, this is not stating that these respondents aren't interested in it, but I think that these customers need to be educated about it. You may have a seamless digital experience on the digital devices you have with you in your daily life to do your job, to communicate with your family. But, you know, what are your expectations that it will actually work seamlessly with the vehicle and that it would be completely integrated? I really see the lower numbers for these mature markets to be about education and to be about, you know, more trust, right? Can an OEM get it right and get it right the first time? You know, you can get CarPlay in your automobile, right? Apple will provide that. But this is really, you know, an entire product offered by a technology company with, to be fair to the traditional OEMs, you know, really it's a clean slate. They have no history to speak of. So they could get it all right. They could make a few mistakes. You know, the future will tell. We know how the traditional automotive companies have done over the years. So I think this is really about a market with a long history and a market with a shorter history and really just what customers want.
So what about, Matt, what about the conflict? And the document sort of dives into the purchase experience or the purchase process, a survey of that, and digital expectations there. And I'm asking because 18 months ago I drove through a BMW roadshow, an i3, and there were BMW contractors there at the dealer dealing with this whole thing, right? So that sort of told me something about how BMW views their ability to get new stuff into their channels. And is that simply a mountain that, given all the regulations and everything else, that the OEMs are going to have a very hard time improving that process? You know, how is that going to play out?
No, I think that the in a mature market scenario, the market is really set up to give an advantage to a more mature brand, you know, like a BMW or a Ford or a GM or a Chrysler, just because of their exposure and their presence. I think the challenge is going to be like for an i3 or for, you know, a Nissan Leaf, to be able to execute flawlessly the delivery of the product, the digital experience for shopping, sales, and ownership for the customers. I mean, the i3 is a fantastic product, and it's got some fantastic technology. But I just think if you flip the coin and say, what if Apple was to make an automobile, and you think about all of the ways that they flawlessly execute in their manufacturing process, you know, I think it's just a different perspective. And people, I think, are willing to give both a chance. I just think in an emerging market that there's going to be a heavy preference for technology first.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating because this brand preference question, you know, it's usually with the survey data, you don't always, you know, intent and actual behavior are sometimes quite different. But this is a very different measurement, and I think it's kind of it kind of does point to an opportunity. Potentially, upsetting some of the logic that we have about the transitions to new fuels, to new powertrains, because you know the emerging markets, and when you hear Tesla talk about things, they of course say that the 85 million vehicle market. They're not gunning for being a dominant player there. They're happy with a niche. Right. And so certainly 20% of the U.S. interested in or willing to switch brands is still a huge number. That's 250 million vehicles. Just to give an idea, 250 million vehicles are probably on the road in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So 20% of that is 50 million vehicles that could switch over, and that's over many, many years. And so there's no shortage of opportunity, but in even more staggering is the global number, because there's probably 1 billion people going to get on the road in the next decade or so, and so those people, are going to be essentially greenfield opportunities. So it's very fascinating to me to see whether that will be captured by entrants or by expansion of the market. And I'll throw one more thing in the logic here, is because historically, geographically, there's been local players that have taken on the production and branding in emerging markets. So China is the largest producer of cars in the world today, but mm-hmm. you probably haven't heard of the brands. You speaking, of course, to my audience.
Sure.
And so we're dealing with vast numbers of vehicles that are invisible to the Western eye. And also, if you look at Japan's development, in the second half of the 20th century, if you look even at post-war Germany, it was Volkswagen, it was Toyota who mobilized their local populations first before they went into incumbent markets. And so we're seeing that also in India to some degree with local brands, Tata especially. And so there's this interesting question then, will non-consumption of automobiles be addressed by the existing or even local brands, or are we going to see them served by new technology brands, which is I think completely hasn't been discussed as far as I know.
Yeah, and if I can add to, one of the reasons why we wanted to ask a provocative question like this is, the team that I work with and the customers we speak with are under a lot of pressure, particularly in the North American marketplace, which is, such a vibrant market. This morning we're seeing that for September sales for 2015, all of the big three reported double-digit sales increases, including Nissan. We're looking at a seasonally adjusted annual sales rate of potentially, close to 18 million. It's very, very wow. active market, right? Yeah. And I think that we are close to breaking a record that was set, over 10 years ago. So that's great news for the economy. It's great news for customers in terms of, product and choice. But, the challenge is going to be for those, I'm calling them traditional, meaning they're not Apple, they're not Google manufacturers. They have to deliver a digital experience that is, extremely seamless and personalized to customers. And that is what the Selfie Experience Cars Online study is focused on. I think the Apples and the Googles right out of the chute don't have the, I would call it legacy problems. Those other OEMs do. So in a way, the deck is in their advantage, right? Because they're going to come to the table like Tesla does. They're not going to have to fight over who has the master record of the customer, which dealership did they visit. I'm expecting that will be managed centrally, and that's just the way that they design their business model. And it will be very interesting to see how their competition influences the market.
Right. So let's now switch to this. You know, we kicked off with the discrepancies mm-hmm. On brand preference in the global and mm-hmm. or global, across the globe. But
yeah,
I think the gist of your report is primarily on this, what you call the selfie experience, which is really about customizing the experience of car purchase, car discovery, purchase, ownership. And the fact that automakers are not, or OEMs, are not typically focused in this direction. And do you, just broadly, do you think they will listen to your signals? Do you see them as capable of embracing this new way of thinking, or is this going to provide an opportunity for someone to disrupt? Is it sustaining or disruptive, I suppose I'm asking?
Yeah, I need to answer this. This is a great question. I need to answer this question kind of using the template for that earlier question about, you know, would you switch to automobiles sold by a technology company? So are customers listening to the advice we give in the selfie experience? I would say absolutely. The customers that we call on, many of them are in the midst of significant digital transformation programs to provide an experience that would be very similar to the selfie experience. But what I have to tell you is that there are many technological challenges along the way to realize that. So if you can think of yourself going to McDonald's, or if you go to Burger King, or if you're, you know, in the checkout line at maybe Target, you know, there's going to be a routine for the salespeople as they treat you, you know, the questions they ask you, the way that they operate, which is very, it's usually very consistent, right? In the automotive industry, just because of the tools that they work with and the way that dealers operate versus a manufacturer, there are some challenges for that seamless digital experience. What I can tell you is that it is universally recognized that that is the holy grail, if you will, of the retail experience for purchase, ownership, and after-sales service and retention. It's just the execution can be challenging, because you need to understand as well that there are business partners that a dealership may work with that may have a relationship with a dealer and may or may not have a relationship with the manufacturer, yet they all need to coordinate things like, what's the history of the customer with the brand? Have they gone from, you know, sales make A to sales make B? Are they a white glove customer? Are they a defected customer who's returning? The type of transparency and that kind of customer or CRM information, which can be, say, you know, mastered in an industry like the hotel industry or the airline industry, for the automotive industry, because of the way the market works, at least in North America, that can be a challenge. So I think they're listening, and I think they know that they need to execute. I just think the challenge needs to be now, with Tesla already being in the market, they probably won't be a volume player, but they're influencing what people expect when they shop. Same thing with Apple. This is just going to increase the pressure even higher to say, customers are not concerned about these hurdles that you have to provide this incredibly tailored, personalized experience. Bring it to them. And if you bring it to them, they will stay and they will be loyal. If you don't, there's a risk they could defect. And that's what we work our customers through, you know, through examining their challenges, their opportunities, their partners, their technologies. But really, I would say the 2015 report is saying cookie cutter approach is not going to work, particularly in the North American market. And I would say if you look at the emerging markets, their expectations for being digital natives are just so much higher. You have to execute, and you have to execute flawlessly every time. And technology is a big part of that.
So how do you suppose they'll execute? I mean, what are their options in terms of implementing this new way of doing business?
Well, I think there needs to be an acknowledgement of the new entrance to the market, like we just talked about. Not only the Apple and potentially Google, maybe someday they'll decide to mass manufacture an autonomous vehicle, or the niche players like a Tesla, but, you know, retail is evolving. So even, you know, a BMW, a Mercedes, they're really changing the game on how they go to market, and the OEMs have to react to that to up the ante themselves, right? I think that the biggest challenge that we're going to face is being able to bring a single view of the customer what we sometimes call a customer 360 that can be, you know, shared and protected, because the customer has to give permission to use any information about their sales history, their experience. So that's the first and foremost most important thing. But then once they give permission to use that information, it's up to the dealer as a retail outlet or retail store and the OEM to use it to their best advantage. The good news is that the customers actually, when we ask them, who do you trust most with your data, last year and this year, at the top of the list, the number one and number two are the OEM and the dealer. So it's a fantastic opportunity to really take advantage of that data. But what I have to say to you is, in the execution, just because of the way the market works, there are some challenges to have a seamless, truly one view of the customer. I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges to face, because once you have that information and once you coordinate and integrate, providing the best customer experience based upon your knowledge of the customer is actually pretty simple. It's just getting to that one view of the customer that can be a challenge. And what you need to understand too is, you know, a dealer group, a manufacturer, you know, they have different views. Many of them are in the process of having a single view of the customer. Some aren't there yet, and that's probably the biggest hurdle to overcome. Once you can get past that, with the tools available today in terms of analytics, there's fantastic customer retention platforms for sales, service, and marketing. The rest kind of executes flawlessly. So I would say it's really the data about the customer and the product that's our hurdle you have to get past. We call that in the industry master data management.
Flip this and talk about buyers. The survey uses a term familiar to Apple users: continuity. Cars Online sees the consumer seeking a seamless, bundled experience. The survey included a story about Margaret, a car buyer seeking a long-term, fixed-price deal from the manufacturer. Let's dive into that, Matt.
I agree with you. The interest in customers to have, really the ultimate convenience in the sales and service experience is definitely there. I think that's part of the selfie experience. And the reason why we call out Margaret looking at, you know, replacing her aging vehicle is that, you know, new business models need to come to market. So a very good example would be Apple Care for your Apple device. Today in the market, you can say purchase an extended service contract with a vehicle when you make a purchase, and that might be, say, above and beyond a bumper-to-bumper warranty, you know, and that's great. But when you think about how the industry is evolving with things like usage-based insurance, with things like mobility services or the prevalence of services like Uber, I definitely agree that where the market is headed is where you would look at a future where, you know, whether it's, you know, a traditional OEM or a new entrant like Apple, you could definitely say, you know, buy this vehicle, maintenance is included, no haggle for a predetermined period of time, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if they take an approach like they do with the leasing of phones now, right? So instead of making a high out-of-pocket purchase, you pay, you know, a low monthly lease fee, and you just perpetually stay in the product, and you might get a refresh every now and then. I would not be surprised at all if that is a business model that is brought to bear with some of the new entrants in the marketplace. That is, I think, what the market is craving and really what customers want. You know, who doesn't want to drive a new vehicle every 2 years, right? So I think it's definitely, you know, an innovative way of looking at how you could package, you know, usage of a product with a predetermined mileage and a guarantee that it'll work. Definitely.
Question. Let's step into this, wade in a little bit on the data side of things, because understudied questions is around insurance. The insurance companies have a huge amount of data. They are tracking behavior through obviously through accident data. They're also able to spot probably where dangerous intersections exist.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to understand the types of accidents people get into by, you know, the repair records. And what I think that one aspect of it is that they could do a lot more if they were to give people some sort of in-car monitor. And in particular, there's a one company that's doing this, that's a third-party automatic that's offering sort of drivers the ability to track their own behavior while driving. They can detect sudden stops. They can detect mileage. They can detect acceleration and speeding. And imagine if that information were passed on to insurers who might actually give you a discount in exchange for good behavior. Now, what I am trying to puzzle through is you have this opportunity for third parties, OEMs, and insurance companies to divide the knowledge of the data that is going to be collected. Is that the notion of competition, where really the competition is who controls the data, who controls the data through the provision of services? Is that going to be a basis of competition going forward?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a direction I think the market has already been headed in for some time. In our survey last year, 2014, we recommended that you consider data as the new oil, right? It's a fossil fuel reference, but the idea would be if you strike oil, you strike gold, right? I think in the future, with the prevalence, with the growing prevalence of services where car sharing or mobility services are really gaining a foothold. Right now, I think mostly in dense urban areas, but services like Uber are also growing and challenging existing laws and regulations. There may come a time when we have more of co-opetition as opposed to competition, where that shared view of the customer can benefit multiple parties. It can benefit a manufacturer that makes a vehicle, an insurance company that sells a product, and potentially a third party that might offer a mobility service. So I think we're definitely we're headed in that direction.
Let me give you a scenario.
Data is the starting point.
Yep. Because it's also a function of capabilities and competencies and processes and so on. So I'll give this example. This came to me from Europe. There's an insurance company in the Nordic countries that is offering white label insurance to OEMs. So the OEM could possibly say, Ford could offer Ford insurance, and maybe not in the U.S., but globally somewhere.
Sure.
And so Ford would not really be an insurer, but they would be offering a rebranded insurance policy. Yeah. And the advantage would be that the Ford dealers would take they would be automatically the go-to location for getting repairs.
Yeah, it's a retention play, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a retention play. But at the same time, the question is that because they outsource that insurance problem, the insurer could go back and say, well, we now are in a much closer relationship. Let's see how we can make your cars be more friendly for us, meaning easier to repair, making them more, having more data collection that we can then lower the premium. So once you become, you join up in that way, right, in some collaborative way, you could then start to see influences from the right, direction, which means let's be more intelligent about safety. Let's be more intelligent about data. And incidentally, a company like an OEM would, when faced with the question of what do we do about data, their instinct is to go to their suppliers. And so, who would that be? Bosch or whoever is providing electronics, let's say to you, would then step up and say, yeah, we know all about data. We write software. And then we see this with the Volkswagen scandal, because a lot of the code is actually written by component suppliers, and so the question then becomes, an OEM, that their instinct, literally the knee jerk reaction is to go to a supplier when a question of software comes up, when a question of implementation of services comes up, and the ones they turn to would be presumably incumbent suppliers.
Yeah. they will go to those suppliers typically with a specification, right? And the supplier needs to bring the best of breed solution. You know, I agree with you. I think that you know, the white labeling of insurance is a very clever play for, you know, potentially customer retention, but then also, you know, trying to lock in a lifetime of after-sales service parts, right? To get a customer to not defect when their bumper-to-bumper warranty expires, at least in the North American market, you know, can be quite a challenge. I'm sure you've noticed over the past 3 to 4 years, there's a real prominence in prepaid included maintenance that's rolled into the purchase price or the lease price of a vehicle. You know, all the major brands offer that. What I do see, though, is that there is a bit of a barrier between insurance providers and OEMs, I think, in terms of their go-to-market approach. So, you know, we mentioned in our Selfie Experience survey, you know, customers trust OEMs and dealers with their data the most. And customers do believe that if there is a return on divulging data, you know, they're more likely to share it, right? So, hey, you know, if I can get a benefit for sharing this information, I will. But right now, the things that you see, like the dongles that you attach to a vehicle under the dashboard, for example, what Progressive Insurance offers, you know, those communicate with the vehicle, but they're completely engineered to be after-sales devices, and I don't think there's any real cooperation between the OEM Sure. and the insurance companies, or if there is, it's very nominal, right? Because you can go to any auto parts store and buy any number of tools to, you know, go in and recalibrate your vehicle to do things within certain parameters. I think in the future, when you mention safety, and we mention insurance, and really the way the insurance industry works today, its model is based upon risk management, right? I think if we look at the customer data as really the whole, the manufacturers that work together, I think, with insurance providers to provide innovative and interesting products, like we talked about earlier, you know, like an Apple Care approach to, you know, a vehicle. And then even baking in the advanced driver assistance systems or autonomous vehicle capabilities, because I believe that will be potentially one of the safest ways to be transported anywhere, right? And many customers are willing to pay for that type of transportation. You know, almost 80% of all the respondents were interested in an autonomous driving vehicle. 80% would pay more for it. 65% would you know, accept a medium to high price increase. There's a lot of interest in growth markets, but also in mature. You know, 95% growth versus 68% mature. That's a lot of interest. So I would expect in the future the walls that we would see between manufacturing and selling a vehicle, marketing and selling insurance and risk management, and then, you know, autonomous driving, which is going to have, you know, a technology component, you know, with the vehicle being aware of its surroundings, but potentially also infrastructure being aware of vehicles too. I think that's really where the market is headed. And when those pieces come together centered around data, we could have, you know, some of the safest, most reliable transportation we've ever had. And I would hope at, you know, very competitive prices based upon, you know, many manufacturers wanting to provide the best service. And I think that's why when you look at the entrance of an Apple or the existing presence of a Tesla, and you know how Elon Musk is always, you know, poking his finger in the eye of the quote-unquote traditional industry, he's a provocateur. And, you know, there's a reason why he's doing it. It is great marketing, but he's also just sending a message out, which is, you know, you need to change. We need to look at alternate ways to provide transportation. And oh, by the way, Tesla's a great option. Well, I think that, you know, the traditional industry is listening loud and clear, and they are working with their tools and capabilities to do that. But this discussion about, you know, insurance and data and customers, I think it's forthcoming, and I think it's very exciting because it'll bring value to customers and safety to the roads.
I mean, we've been critical of the strategy of Elon Musk here because on this show, because, you know, poking someone in the eye is not the way to get them to ignore you. Because if you want to prevent a competitive response, you'd want to be as stealthy as possible and as sort of unassuming as possible. And that's the exact opposite of Tesla. Who knows? Maybe it's exactly the sort of thing that we need. But it doesn't seem like, as you put it, you know, everybody's listening carefully. I wanted to touch back on this question of competency. And I'm reminded, I had a wonderful conversation with the general manager at at General Motors, mm-hmm. who developed the OnStar system.
Okay.
Back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And at the time, he told a story of how they wanted to start down that road. And the fact was that they wanted initially to go with a supplier. They wanted to commission the solution through outside help. And it was going down that road for a while. The costs involved, the quality they would deliver, the timing, everything was way off what was reasonable. And it was going to get killed. It was saved only because a new manager, well, new CEO actually took over. And this younger CEO was like, okay, let's get rid of this idea of doing it outside. And I he had a hunch that that's where they needed to go with this remote service. Mm-hmm. And back then, by the way, everything was analog. It was it was not even a cellular cellular connection.
Yes, I'm very familiar with OnStar. Yes.
So OnStar started at a time when things were very tough to build at mm-hmm. that level. And so his story, which he teaches as part of the curriculum at Harvard Business School. For the disruption class that's taught there, he explains how it was almost accidental that they did the right thing, and that the instinct was around try to outsource the problem, and it would not have worked because it required an integrated approach in that early stage, and increasingly now. We're facing problems that can only be solved through an integrated approach. Even though we've moved on, these problems are more ambitious today, and so we still need to sort of have an integrative approach to problem solving, and so we can iterate more quickly, so we can actually climb the improvement trajectory, so we can get the good enough product fast enough. And that's the thing that I think is fundamentally what the entrants have. That the incumbents are not, necessarily. Now, I don't want to generalize because, of course, there are very brilliant people working, and it's a global industry, and there are many, many competitors.
Yeah.
We can't generalize, right? But and this is why also I'm skeptical of the Tesla's Tesla assumptions that everybody's slow. I don't know for sure. I mean, I'd say Toyota is one of the smartest companies in the world. Daimler and BMW do amazing work. So anyway, bottom line is that I wonder what your thoughts are on this. How do you see the integration versus modular view of the world? Whereas car companies integrate where they think that they can capture the most value, which means that by having a mechanically integrated product. Mm-hmm. But they think of the electronics as something that's actually something others handle. And what we're seeing is the inherent asymmetry is that, no, it's the mechanicals that are going to become modular due to electric drivetrain. And so that becomes actually trivial.
Yeah.
And then the electronics become the hard thing, and the entrants come.
I agree. I think that this is like a cautionary tale for the manufacturing industry in general, but specifically for automobiles and probably even heavy equipment. It is a strategic decision for a manufacturer, what to build themselves and what to outsource. And to some degree, General Motors can't build every component for every vehicle. Just in terms of speed to market, ability to deliver, they have to source some things from suppliers, but they're going to make those decisions very wisely. So what I'm saying is that, suppliers to OEMs need to listen to the message of the selfie experience as well, because the products they bring to market need to meet or exceed what the OEMs are going to have to do in their multi-year plan. Typically there's going to be a strong relationship between a supplier and their OEM. They know what's coming down the pike. They have a heads up. They can, tweak designs. They can get new equipment to do new things. But to really bring value, I think there's going to be pressure too through to the tier one suppliers to be able to convince OEMs, particularly when we're talking about more technological capabilities that are more like, you know, highly valued intellectual property, like, you know, an OnStar, right? Although I think, you know, 20 years ago, the technology we had at the time, right? You know, I don't think that you could do an OnStar through a supplier. You know, today you probably could, you know, a high school student could do it with a cell phone, right? Yeah. So the market has evolved. But I think it's a strategic decision, and it would be very interesting also to see what Apple builds versus what it outsources, right? It's a strategic decision, but I think that everybody who makes a component, you know, you can't just wait to be told what to do. Not that anybody would do that, but you need to anticipate what's being requested. And here are some things that I'm thinking of. You know, a prediction I will make would be that I think as we progress towards the future, we talked about, you know, automobile manufacturers and potentially some barriers getting, you know, diminishing or becoming less visible between the insurance industry, which, you know, in all states of the U.S. is where you have to have insurance to drive, right, to get a registration and a license, the data for the customer, and that autonomous driving capability. You know, those barriers, you know, are going to start to fade. And I think as we move towards the future, you're going to see things like self-repairing vehicles. You're going to see things like vehicles that know there's a problem and they fix it. So it's not like there's a problem, talk to somebody. Machines that are more self-aware, right? And I also think that just from an environmental perspective, you know, if you look at the technology that is in vehicles today, I'm not sure how familiar the team on the call is aware of the history of emissions and the California Air Resource Board and the introduction of onboard diagnostics in the 80s and 90s, you know, and what has basically evolved from a solution to control pollution has now exploded into this incredible capability to provide so much granularity in climate control and braking and steering, right? I think what we're going to see in the future is that this is to your question, right? What will be outsourced versus what will be strategically manufactured inside the corporation? Yeah. I think we're going to see more of a shift to more software and less physical parts because it is shorter cycles to market, right? And the OEM can control it. I mean, it just kind of makes sense. You pollute more, you manufacture less. I mean, there's a balance, right? But I mean, what's the downside?
Well, the theory suggests, and by the theory we sort of mean this disruption theory that suggests that that companies will, so this boundary layer between what's in and out of the building, out of the company, is determined by the business model. So if the business model and and by this also I mean the profit algorithm, you know, the and that itself is a function of your resources, your processes, and your priorities. If you follow the questions of well, why would you do X? Why would you put that critical function outside the firm's boundaries? It's because, well, you're compelled to by the way you make money, and that means you're compelled to by the tools you have available internally to create incentives to fix things, to move in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And so what the question is, the framework of analysis becomes, let's understand what these alternative brands or suppliers or companies, what their logic is. And this is why you see asymmetric competition is when someone comes at the problem with a view of the world that is just based on a different set of assumptions and a different way of making money, and that's what causes disruption. And when you think about, you know, the phone space, which is where Apple came in, I was witness to this from the other side, is that Apple came in with this notion that these are really computers and we're going to approach them as platforms with ecosystems and computing power as the thing we increase exponentially, whereas the incumbents looked at it from the network problem, which is the operator problem, which was a completely different way of making money, getting paid every month, etc. Yep. So you end up with a whole different logic, And so you're not optimizing in the right direction. This is really the fundamental question as to whether we determine the likelihood of incumbents taking technology, which is available to everyone, and making it sustaining to their business, or looking at this technology and saying, we don't know how to make this work for us. We can see how it might work for the customer. We want to see how it works for us as a business, and so we're going to let somebody else deal with it. And that just opens you up to disruption. And that's where I think the fundamental questions, and there's so many dimensions, and I think your research is on this question of, well, but what does the customer want? What, you know, how do we see their because that's another force vector, if you will. That's another input into the problem, is that customers are shifting. Their expectations are moving, right? There's a moving target there. This is how we look at things. And I'm anything you can add to help us think that through would be very valuable.
Yeah, I think that, the customer is definitely evolving. Surprisingly in our study, the digital natives from the 18 to 34 age bracket, you know, whom we would expect to want a completely digital experience, potentially purchase a vehicle completely online, you know, maybe never interact with a dealer. They also showed a real desire to visit dealers and to physically touch and feel, the automobiles that they were shopping for. I think where we're headed in the future, it's really going to be about customers who are really the recipient of a lot of choice. The choice in the marketplace, it may not just be buy or lease. It may not be buy used. It may be, buy Uber for a year. It may be, 5 years unlimited mileage, insurance included. Charge it at night, automatic software updates. I think that, the market is ripe for that type of disruption. I think the interesting thing, though, is, the Teslas of the world, who are disruptive, who are innovators, who kind of buck the franchise dealer model, they are taking us to a place where, the shopping experience in a dealership is being challenged by it, but I don't think they're quite being displaced. I mean, Tesla really isn't a volume play yet, right? We don't know how much they're really going to take in terms of real market share. I think, and even Apple, when they come into play, I would be surprised, if they're making gold-plated iWatches. If they're going to,
we've been thinking around the same question, the incumbents are like the trump card they're going to play is like, we've got capacity and nobody else can match that.
That's true. But you also don't want to fill parking lots with product no one wants. Companies need to reinvent themselves periodically. And I think that there's a few players who are well into doing that. And I think they have a fighting chance of surviving. But, what I would say is from a software perspective, too, looking forward to how, automobiles will function in the future and heavy equipment and trucks. When we look at the recent event that happened, with the Jeep Cherokee and what that means to the industry, we really need to think about our vehicles as connected devices and moving forward, anything, model year 2013, 14, 15, 16, it's going to be more and more connected. It's a lot like having, a tablet or a phone. And that means that there's going to be, a need for tighter communication with people who are qualified to service it. And I think that's going to give a bit of an edge to dealers, right? But if the OEM and their dealer network are able to provide that highly personalized selfie experience, I think they're going to win. If they can't, or if there's challenges doing that, I think then you might risk defection.
Fascinating. Do you spend time speaking to having conversations with OEMs? How are they responding to some of this? I mean, without telling us any details, but what is the mood?
Yeah, that's all I do. That's what I do, and I love my job. I actually have a lot of automotive in my family, so people who sell it, people who worked in manufacturers. So, no, the customers I work with are very, very, very good people, and they want to provide the best experience possible. But what I would say, that a challenge for customers is being able to flawlessly execute and deliver, making a solution or a plan or selecting a tool is probably the easiest part. It's flawless delivery. Why do I say that? Because in the traditional industry where you have businesses that run that are basically, P&Ls all by themselves, who basically have to, pay their own bills, and they pay their salespeople and their service people, right? They have a bank account, they have a community they support. They're a business entity, and they are not wholly owned by the manufacturer. So they need to coordinate with the OEM about, okay, what are the tools that are coming? What are the programs that are going to be released? Then they have to learn them, and then they have to execute them. I would say that is really the biggest challenge, and that is not a rub on either the manufacturer or the dealer networks. It's just that, they have different interests, right? The manufacturer wants to bring the best product that's the safest and the highest value with the highest residual value with the best fuel economy for the best experience, right? And then the dealer wants to have a great relationship and sell value-added things the customer wants and how are the kids doing and, did your son get married? I just think the challenge is, what you'll see in the franchise dealer networks is this really, I know this sounds corny, but they're really like the heart of America, right? These are the people who are like bread and butter people running these businesses, and they get a lot of new technology handed to them, and they've got to kind of, in addition to, running the store, managing the orders, making sure the customers are happy, they've got to learn new tools. And what I would say is this: the pace of technology can be challenging to keep up with. I think that they will, but that's really, that's kind of where, the challenges come. Though they can be overcome, and I've been part of several transformation programs, one at one of the largest domestic manufacturers. I was part of a program where we transformed their after-sales service experience with digital tools, and it was really a great experience because it was desperately needed, meaning simpler tools, simpler processes that gave correct information that was comprehensive earlier, but that also integrated into the computer systems that they use in the store, and then they report back that that was a big win-win. But that's one example, but it can be quite challenging because it's very complex to order vehicles. It's very complex to validate incentive eligibility depending upon the program, right? I would say the technology execution and delivery is easily the hardest part, which is why, coming back to our discussion, right? The Apples of the world, when you go to the Apple store and you say, I made an appointment at the Genius Bar, it's going to be the same everywhere, right? It's not like that in the traditional model, and they are changing, and they're going to have to change a little.
Yeah, we could talk all day about the dealership issue, and I think this is one thing is most people are very dismissive of it, but you're pointing out how crucial it is, and I think in general, just the retail sector overall, and they are the final touch point with the customer. It's really hard. Retail is really, really hard, and what Apple has done and Tesla is trying to do is sort of short circuit that problem by saying we actually can handle that difficulty. But it is when you look at the Apple X, it's a great story, it's a great experience, it's a great achievement they've had. But it has taken 15 years. It's been an incredibly long slog, and it's been. The growth rate in Apple stores in terms of units, the actual points of sale, has been there's been a constant rise, but it's been the sales of the business have been much higher than that. So they've felt a lot of pressure to increase retail faster over this period, but it just hasn't been possible. And they're still very, very unpenetrated globally. So you're dealing with 400 or 500 stores. I don't know the latest count, but they were opening maybe 20 a year, and that's just not enough to handle the growth rate of the iPhone. So that's why they still rely on mobile operators to do the bulk of sales.
Yeah, and other channels like a big box retail store. Absolutely.
Remember
the Dell stores too. I mean, they're not the first.
Exactly.
They were the first to be wildly successful.
That's right. So there's a lot of failure before Apple even, and so we can't point to Apple and say everybody can do this.
I agree. Listen, do you remember the Newton? Do you remember the Apple Newton?
Sure.
The 90s. I mean, it's a lot of trial and error, and I think they've hedged their bets. Having a visionary at the helm definitely helps. But I would also say too, another cautionary tale is, we will, you know, give Apple all these compliments like they have it all figured out, right? Well, they don't make cars yet. They haven't delivered a car yet. Let's not forget that, all right?
That's true. That's true.
And when they took the key strategist who architected that entire retail experience and he went to Sears, it was an unmitigated disaster.
JCPenney.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a one size fits all. So innovation
is it's not necessarily the individual. It's a combination of things. And this is why when I look at, I have a model for trying to predict how quickly technologies get adopted. I put this distribution as one of the things that is crucial to have as a success criteria. And that means distribution outside of the firm, usually, that develops the technology. So the way I frame it is, can you get somebody to help you sell the product? It's a crucial question. And getting someone outside to help you means that you can multiply the number of points of sale from whatever you could control to, you know, orders of magnitude higher.
Sure.
So what's wrong with having thousands of people help you sell your product? And that's what the dealership network is all about. Now, it may not be optimal. It may be... it may have a lot of legacy issues, but I still think that that's the best way to get cars sold. And I think internationally, when you look at it outside of the U.S., there are U.S. Weirdness, you know, the fact that they're family owned and all kinds of things due to history. But when you look at it globally, nobody's thought of selling cars any other way. Even when you start with a clean slate. I think in China, that's still the case, right? So so there's something
They are testing new models, though. I mean, I've heard that, you know, Alibaba and even eBay, you know, they're selling vehicles online. You know, whether or not they come through a dealer, I think just depends locally on whether the OEM allows a new delivery outside a dealer. But in Europe, you know, they have the block exemption regulation, which, you know, forced the OEMs to allow non-dealers to sell new vehicles and to service them. So there are, I agree with you, different models globally. I don't know if that would be successful in our market, meaning like if I can buy an iPhone from Best Buy, I can buy an iPhone from Apple. You know, could I get a Corvette from a Best Buy? I mean,
sure.
I don't know if that would work, if that would be, you know, a benefit for the consumer. But they did make that change in Europe. And my understanding is that not many people did it.
It's about time. And it, I mean, yeah. It's about the change how long it takes. So, it's fascinating because it's not a simple answer, right? This problem of how to bring digital services to automobiles, how to think about all these things is why we talk about this on this show for so many years. And we've been trying to, and looking at it from all angles. But there is something happening. There's a lot happening. And I think it's great to see your points of view on this. And I want to get more information. Anything you'd like to tell our folks?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the opportunity. So to download a copy of the Cars Online 2015 survey, The Selfie Experience, just go to capgemini.com and you can search on Cars Online 2015. We have a series of videos, a PDF you can download. There's lots of very interesting information about the customer journey and, you know, ways to look at digital retail and digital transformation to be successful. And we're very proud and happy to call on many, many, many OEM clients and even some tier ones to help them understand these challenges and help them execute to change. We're happy to talk to anyone who's interested. Thank you.
Well,
thanks
great.
For having me.
Yeah, you're in the trenches out there, man. It's fantastic to see this work done, and thanks for taking the time to help us.